Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Randall DiStefano. So welcome, Randall. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for having me.
So how long have you been doing your research?
I guess I started back in the year 2000. We had come back from a trip from Italy, and it really piqued my interest. And I got a hold of my father, who's 90 now, and he had just very little information. He had a couple death certificates. So I went by that, which was kind of confusing because my great-grandfather, it says he was from Catania, but come to find out he was actually from Nicolosi, and his wife was also from Nicolosi in Sicily. So that's what got me started on it. And I ended up calling a cousin, my father's cousin, Marion, out in California, because he said she might have more information. And at that time, I don't think that she had too much more information than my father had. So I just went through some documents and scratched my head and put some stuff together and did the research up basically on my own.
Yeah, you know, and I had similar things with my father's father. Same kind of thing with as far as the birth certificate. I was always told, first I was told he was born in Naples. Then I was told it was Caserta. And then eventually I found that was, you know, when I finally got his birth certificate, it was Pagani. So
oh.
It does get confusing. And my grandmother, my father's mother, same thing. I thought she was born in Naples, and she was born close, but she was born in Circola. And that's great that your dad's still hanging in there. My dad would have been 100 today.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
And my great-grandfather would have been, like 173 or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. My
It's
father's in great
insane.
shape. He really is in great shape. So we're hoping he keeps on going and going. So.
So once you found all of that, what kind of interesting things did you find out when you were researching the family?
Well, I think I started out in 2000, and I put together my first book was my great grandfather's name was Giuseppe DiStefano, and he was married to Grazia Pistorio, and I always heard about him in the cemetery up the road from where I grew up. His gravestone's there, and there was always a little porcelain medallion on the gravestone. It was of my great grandmother, and so I always knew about them, and I didn't know much about their kids. I knew my uncle Al. He lived down the street. He owned a gas station in town, so pretty much everybody in town knew Alfred DiStefano, and we used to go there a lot, and we just called him Uncle Al, and he was always so nice, so kind. But I didn't know anything else about my Giuseppe and Grazia had 9 children. They actually had 10. They had a set of twins back in, I think it was 1897, Paolo and Paola. But Paola died, she must have died shortly after birth, because all I have is her birth record. And I don't have anything else. I don't even have the death certificate. But I didn't know much about them. I had only met one other great uncle, and it was Uncle Andy. And even my father didn't really know most of his uncles because they had all moved away. So I really wanted to dig deep and find out about them and see pictures of them. I had never seen a picture of them. I got my first book. My cousin Marion sent me this picture. I know that the people listening won't be able to see it, but it's the first picture I had ever seen of my great grandfather. And it's actually the first picture my father had ever seen of him. My father knew him, but he died when my father was 14. So he didn't, you know, it was gramps, you know, grandpa or whatever he called him. I'm not sure what he called him at the time. So I really dug into it, and I got everybody I finally connected all the 9 kids together. I got all the pictures of all their, of them from different family members. And I must have over 300 of his descendants in this book. And I put the book out, and it was nice because I got to get the whole family's now connected back together through a Facebook page I started called the Descendants of Giuseppe DiStefano and Grazia Pistorio. So now all 9 links of the family are all now tied back together again, which is kind of fun. Gets to be fun.
Yeah, it does, especially finding the long lost cousins is especially fun.
Yeah, I had one uncle that was I just couldn't find. It was Uncle Victor. I'd never seen a picture of him, and it was in an obituary. I ended up finding him, his wife, by chance. It was out of the blue. I had bought the subscription to a magazine company. They do newspapers, research, and things like that. And East Hampton used to have a newspaper called the East Hampton Times. And I was scrolling through these. If you put in the name, it comes up in yellow on each one of these pages. So it came up to Stefano, and I was looking, and off the corner of my eye, I could see the NO in yellow. And I scrolled over there, and I saw it was Victor and his wife at the had just had a baby in Middlesex Memorial Hospital in Middletown. And it said the name Sandra. So I'm like, and then I went and I found his wife's name in an obituary. And then I was able to contact a granddaughter through Facebook. And I actually talked to her on the phone, Denise.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. So it connected all nine. I got them all nine together, which was kind of exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. So when they came to America, where did they first settle?
The first person to come to America, his name was Pistoria. It was Grazia's uncle. He came in 1891, and so the only record I have of him where he first lived is in East Hampton, and that was in census from 1900. East Hampton was not a big town in Connecticut, but it had a lot of bell manufacturers. So there was a lot of work there. There was at least t 10 companies that made bells in Connecticut. So he came here and was working there. And Giuseppe moved over in 1901 by himself with a few dollars in his pocket and moved in with Gaetano Pistorio, his uncle, Grazia's uncle. So in then 1905 he went back and got Grazia. And when they came back in 1905, they had Giuseppe, Grazia, and Antonini, his name was, and because he was a newborn, but they left two of the boys behind. They left Paolo and Salvatore behind, and Grazia was also pregnant with my grandfather Gaetano. And 4 months later, that must have been interesting. You're taking me now to America, and I'm 4 months pregnant. So they came over, and he ended up going back in 1911 and getting the other two kids. But they all settled in East Hampton. And Giuseppe started working at the Bell Factory as well. He was a plater at the Bell Factory in East Hampton, Connecticut.
Wow, that's an interesting profession.
He went on to become very wealthy. He ended up owning a meat market during the Depression. He ended up being real estate in, into real estate. He owned over 10 homes that he rented out in the town of East Hampton.
Wow,
So he did very
that's
well
pretty
for
good.
himself.
And you know, it wasn't unusual for to leave, a couple of kids behind and then either go back and get them. And in my case, my grandparents left my uncle there, and he didn't come over until 1950 with his whole family. So he had never met his mother. He never met his brothers and sisters until he was like 50 years old.
These kids were in there. They were just about, one of them was a teenager and one was just shortly younger, and they had been there for 6 years by themselves. But I don't know who they were with. It could have been with their mother. Their mom was still alive. Their dad died. Giuseppe's dad died, I think, 1850. He was only 52 years old when he died. He died young. So he must have been staying with his mother.
Yeah, and that was pretty early to come over in the 1890s. You know,
Yeah,
most
18.
of us came over in the, early 1900s,
Right.
1910, 1915.
Yeah, I think Gaetano must have been like a feeler gauge, feeling out the situation, because he was there for like, well, 11 years before Giuseppe came over. So, and then Giuseppe moved in with him.
And so did they all wind up working at the Bell Factory? I'm obsessed on the Bell Factory now because I think that's so cool.
Oh yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, there was two major Bell factories. There was the Barton Bell Company, and there was another one, the Bevan Bells. And Bevan's still in around today. Bevan Bells is the only working Bell factory. It's been in operation for about 200 years now, and they still make bells. But they worked there. Gaetano worked there. Gaetano actually, Pistorio actually had a couple sons come over, and they were living there as well. And I just could never find anything on them. I don't know where they went. I don't know what cemetery they're buried in. They just sort of disappeared. And I can't, I only found the one census that's mentioned in 1910 of them. By 1920, they weren't living in East Hampton anymore.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera. connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's also an interesting place because you don't envision that, you know, Italians going to East Hampton, Connecticut in 1890.
No. So I don't know where he got his info from, but he moved by 1900. He was living there. I don't know where he was between 1891 and 1900.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they didn't, because I know some came in, some Italians came in. I don't know the years, but I know some came in through Boston and some came in through Providence. So it's possible. Yeah. That they came in through there as opposed to coming in through New York.
No, they came in through New York.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, Gaetano Pistorio came through New York, and so did Giuseppe, yeah. Yeah, they all came through New York. But so I don't know why they moved into East Hampton, other than maybe they had a heads up on possible work being there.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, because I do know that, you know, I do know that the Italians for a while in New York, they didn't have work, and they would just come and ask people if you wanted to go work someplace. And, you know, you went. I know some of them went to Ohio and some went to Pennsylvania, you know, yeah. And those type of things. So,
yeah.
So now have you been back to the hometown?
Oh yeah. It was interesting. I went back the first time ever. I went this past year, me and my wife, we went to Sicily. We stayed in Catania, outside of Catania, in a small town. Right on the ocean, and then we drove into Nicolosi, and which is Nicolosi is a town that's it's right on the foothills of Etna. Because if you actually go visit Mount Etna and go up on there, take the gondola up to the top, you're actually in the town of Nicolosi. The whole tourist area is in Nicolosi, but it's not really a tourist town as far as going into Nicolosi. It's not that type of town, but people go, they pass through it. You see the buses all the time, and they're headed to Etna. So we went there, and it was fascinating because I did all this research and I had all these names in my head. I know these people almost personally in my book now. And I went into the cemetery, and it was crazy because all these names and faces, because they're all on the tombstones,
yes.
Just like Giuseppe has a porcelain medallion on his wife's back home. All these had the porcelain medallions with pictures. So I have a ton of pictures of these people in the book. When I was seeing them, I was like, yep, they're in my book. Yep, they're in my book. Yep, they're in my book. So that was probably the highlight of the trip, which is kind of morbid, but going through the cemetery. But it was fascinating because the cemetery looks so small. But when you get there, it's all the way they do it in Italy is they have these big, they're big buildings. They were like three stories tall, and they had just tombs everywhere, just stacks and stacks and stacks. And it was probably eight big buildings filled. There were thousands of people in here in the small little town. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, my cousin explained that to me when we were in Turkola and we went to where my great grandfather is buried. And, you know, they, after a while they take the bones and put them in like an ossuary box and put them in put them in the wall, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
You know? But he actually showed me, my grandmother's father's family, they actually had a mausoleum type of thing, which was no longer in the family because, I think it was my great, great grandfather sold it. Apparently he liked women and gambling.
Oh.
And, he sold a lot of stuff off. And so it was sold to another family, but I don't think there's anybody at all in there anymore. So the wealthier families would have that and then eventually move them out, you know, to sell
yeah,
themselves.
That's what I had heard. But when I went to the one in Nicolosi, a lot of these little, I don't know if they're called tombs or crypts. They've been there for, you know, the ones I was putting in my book are early 1800s. So they've been there a long time. It doesn't look like they're ever moved out of there. And there's actually, you walk around, there's still flowers in all the little vases on the sides, and they all have like a little lighted candle next to them. And it's really kept up well. So I was surprised. Though I was looking for my great grandfather's father, Paolo, there, but I couldn't find him. And I took a picture of every single person in there by the name of DiStefano. I went through every single building and I spent probably 3 hours in the cemetery. My wife was up. She helped for the first 15 minutes, and she's like, "Okay, I'm going to sit outside now." So
Yeah, sir, we have to.
I have hundreds of pictures of picture, yeah, of the tombs, yeah.
So did you find any live relatives while you were
Yeah, I
there?
did. It was interesting because when I was doing the book, I also on Facebook, I contacted everybody that I could find in Nicolosi with the same last name. And it's another interesting point is they spell it two ways in Nicolosi. They spell it like I spell it DISTEFANO, or they just spell it as one word, DiStefano, no space, no capital letters, which I thought that was interesting. But I did find a relative. His name was Nino. His name is Nino Alessandro. He's about 38 years old, and I contacted him, and he actually sent me a picture of his grandparents. So they're in the book, and then I got some other pictures from other people that are in the book. But so when I went over there, I contacted him. He met me at the mother church right in the center of town, and we tried to talk. I actually spoke more Italian than he spoke English, because he spoke no English. So that was interesting, but super nice guy, and it was nice. It was a weird relation because his name's DiStefano, but we're related through a woman, Grazia DiStefano, who's like my third great aunt, and she married a Longo, and then they had a child named Maria Grazia Longo, and she married a DiStefano. So it's back into it again. But yeah, so we're distant cousins, probably fourth or fifth cousins or something like that.
Yeah, and they it doesn't matter to them. A cousin is a cousin is a cousin,
Yeah.
It's funny. They're still excited to meet you and everything.
Yeah, he was pretty excited. He's a super nice guy. He got a couple books. I actually sent him three books. They got lost in the mail because he donated some pictures to me, and they got lost, and all of a sudden, so I said, I'll just send three more. So he got the three, and all of a sudden he got the three more. So he gave them to all of his cousins, and he gave them to a 90-year-old. He has a 90-year-old uncle, and he said his uncle loved it. He saw all his relatives in the book.
Yeah, the mail system in Italy is interesting to say the least.
Yeah,
And I
yeah.
tried, I had the same thing. I sent my cousin and his daughter some shirts and stuff like that, and it was stuck in UPS for, boy, it must have been a month.
Yeah.
They kept saying they couldn't find the address, and then you call them, they didn't answer the phone, and
Yeah.
finally, he just had went there and picked it up himself. It was quite an adventure for sure,
Yeah,
for
it was
sure.
stuck. This one was stuck in customs, and I'm like, oh, geez. They have a lot of laws in Italy about I had posted it for sale on the page in Nicolosi, and a couple people said, you're not supposed to give out personal information. We don't have
Yeah.
the we have the privacy laws here. And then a woman, I forget what her name was, she says, I don't think they're going to mind that the book stops in 1900. I don't think they're going to sue anyone. So, yeah.
So now that's your dad's family. Now, how about your mom's family?
My mom's family is from Caserta, and I would like to do a book on them, but the problem is, even with doing a book, doing this book with my own name, DiStefano, I had trouble sometimes. The original book, this one I did on my own, and I got it through church records. But the first one, contacting people, some people aren't so willing to give up anything. If their name's not DiStefano, they're not personally connected. And since my mom's name's Fiorello, I think it'll be more difficult for me. And a lot of the information is lost because that whole generation is gone now. So I don't really, everybody that's alive now is like my age or a few years older, and they don't really have any information about the Fiorello family. So that one's kind of gone.
Yeah, and I ran into kind of this similar type of stuff too, especially with my dad's father. I couldn't find anything on him online. I couldn't find hardly anything. And interestingly enough, my mom's family from Torrito Bari, they all their records have been filmed and indexed. I don't know if maybe they started there, but for a small little town in the middle of nowhere,
Yeah.
there's a lot of stuff on the Antonati. my dad's mom, I found things here and there, but because of who they were, it was once I found something, it was very, very easy to research. But I couldn't find Sorrentino for nothing. I couldn't find, I knew that my grandfather had to be Achille because my oldest uncle was Achille. Searched and searched and searched. And then finally I hired somebody over there to help me find it. And he eventually found, confirmed, Achille. And, I was able to go back, several generations from there. But to your point about newspapers, I tell everybody the same thing. You never know what you're going to find. I just, newspapers.com
Yeah, that's what
had
I was.
one of those freebies one weekend. So I went in there and I typed in Sorrentino and I knew that my dad's family lived in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Why, how, I have no idea. I know that part of my grand, at least my grandmother's aunt lived in New Jersey at the time, but this is back in the 20s now. And I found this local newspaper online and I must have found 20 or 30 little articles. They had like, I guess, what you would call, a page where they would put local news or things like that, or I guess people could write in whatever they want. And I actually found references back to my grandmother's and grandfather's family in Italy in this little paper in New Jersey in the 1920s. So you never know
You
where
never
you're going to
know.
find stuff.
Yeah, you don't ever know. I find stuff all the time. Now I can get into that. It's called the East Hampton News. I can get into it now through the East Hampton Public Library. They now have it printed. So I didn't know that then. I wouldn't have had to pay for that newspapers.com thing, but they have it actually online through the East Hampton Library. So if you go in and you can just punch in the last name and they just every page comes up with the last name on it. So it was really helpful.
Yeah, so when you made the trip over to Italy, did you just go to Sicily? Did you go to hit the mainland at all, or?
We did quite a bit of Sicily, and then we went up to we flew in, we're from Catania, we flew into Naples, and then we rented a car and did the entire Amalfi Coast. Yeah,
Did you take
which
that road, that one lane road along the mountains? That
oh yeah,
is that scary a lot?
I loved it. My wife was freaking out. She was it's funny because she kept on telling me to slow down, and I'm like, people are passing me. You want me to slow down? It's different when you're not the driver. Because it's all like a cliff. Over here is a cliff.
I did it. I did it 25 years ago. This trip, when we went this trip, I didn't drive. I just sat next to the driver but we stayed in Sorrento, so we took the drive through the Amalfi Coast, and I was just like, this is scary stuff. And there were two guys on a, I guess like a, wasn't a moped, I guess like a scooter. And there were two guys, and they were holding like 8 foot length of pipe, holding it as they're driving this road on a scooter.
It's crazy. It's crazy. I
Okay.
can't imagine. I see those buses and I see the people and like they're sitting up high in that bus and it just looks like death to the left of you, depending on which way you're going, you know. And these drivers, they're so good. The bus drivers are so good. Oh, they
Oh
do it every
yeah, no.
day.
In Naples, we had a driver. He was excellent, and he had, I guess it was like a 10-seat minivan type of thing. And the way he would maneuver through those streets in Naples, because you know what the streets in Naples are like, right? They're,
They're crazy.
yeah.
It's crazy.
And I learned that don't try to dodge the scooters; they'll go around you.
Yeah, the scooters have, they make their own rules in Italy. They do. It's crazy because you'll be in like a hairy mountain curve and there'll be a police officer directing traffic and telling everybody to stop. Scooters don't stop. They just go right around them because they're letting the other traffic come. The scooters don't care. They go anyway. And the police don't care because
No.
they know scooters can fit, so they're not worried about them.
Yeah, and I remember we drove from Naples to Sorrento, and there was this big long tunnel. And I guess I was behind like three or four cars, and it was one lane each way. And this guy in this Lamborghini or something like that, he blew past all five cars in one shot. Just revved it up to 100 and
Yeah.
whatever. And when we got the end of the tunnel, they actually had stopped them. And I said to my wife, I said, I guess passing five cars at one time at
That might
150
just
miles
do
an hour is that's even too much for the Italian police to deal with.
Yeah, they had, I tell you what, you got to learn how to drive over there, because if they have a second to get out into traffic, they're taking it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why, like I said, I didn't want to drive this time. Although, there were certain spots, like if I went back, there were certain areas, like out in the country, like driving through Sicily and stuff like that, where there's not a lot of traffic,
Yeah.
driving that road around. I'm sure you took away, you have the mountains on one side and the ocean on the sea
Yeah.
on the other side. It's incredible. How long were you there for?
We were there for 23 days.
Oh, super.
Yeah,
Yeah,
because
wow.
we did the whole Tuscany area too. We went up to Montepulciano, which is crazy beautiful, and there wasn't. And it's kind of the busy season when we went, but Montepulciano was just there was. It seemed like there was nobody there, and it's such a beautiful town, and the wine there is spectacular. And we met some great people that own a wine shop there, and we couldn't get a dinner reservation in town. We just got there that night, and we couldn't get a dinner reservation. And we had bought some wine from these people, and she said, "Where are you going to dinner tonight?" We said, "Well, we can't get a reservation." And she said, "I'll get you a reservation." So she called this place that we had already called and went into and asked, and they said, "No, we're booked." She called up, she booked us a reservation in that same place.
That's great. That's
Yeah.
great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they are like that. They're very accommodating. We there's a vineyard on the side of Vesuvius, Sorrentino. Not a relation. I wish they were. But I said, once I saw that, I said, well, we have to go.
Yeah.
I can't go to Naples and not go to the Sorrentino vineyard on the side of
Right.
Vesuvius. And it was fantastic. They had a wine tasting lunch type of thing. And you're like in it's in another world.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it really is. The whole eating experience there is unbelievable. And the cost is compared to here is so cheap. It's just crazy.
Yeah, especially in the wine. You go in the supermarket. I didn't buy any supermarket wine this time. I did the first time we were there, but you go into the supermarket and you see the bottles of wine for like 2 euros or something like
Yeah.
that. It's
Yeah, it's crazy.
unbelievable.
Yeah. But yeah, we did quite a bit of Italy. We were planning on going back this year, but I think we're going to do 2024. We're going to go with some friends from North Carolina, and we're going to go back and do we're going to go to Sicily again, and then we're going to meet them up in Montepulciano, and then we're going to drive up to Cinque Terre. And because that's what they want to go. The thing about doing the Amalfi Coast is if you kind of want to do it when you're young, because it's all stairs everywhere you
Yes,
go.
yes.
It's all you're going to go down, you got to come back up, because we had to carry our luggage. We found a parking place, a parking garage in Positano, but then we had to walk to our villa, which was beautiful. We stayed right in town, and we had a view of the ocean and the view of the town. But we had to walk up 155 stairs with our luggage.
Oh, wow. Oh, I don't
Yeah,
think.
so when we got up there, I had to get changed. I was like, it had like rained on me. Yeah, it's beautiful,
Well,
beautiful.
we did that in Sheila in Calabria, and that was really such a beautiful place. But we didn't have to carry the luggage, but our hotel was at the top, and then the restaurants were all down by the sea, so
Right.
you had to walk all the way down. Now they have an elevator there,
Oh, that's
but
nice.
we took the elevator down. I don't know why we took the elevator down and then decided to walk up, and I was like every. And it was like levels, and every level I would look up and like, oh boy, this is gonna take forever. And we would, our kids are young. Our kids are 27 and 26.
Yeah.
We adopted them when we were older, and they're running up come on, it's taking you
Oh,
so
yeah.
long.
Yeah. Yeah, they have an elevator in Siena as well. We went to Siena for a day trip, which is another that was really packed. Siena was really packed, and another beautiful town. But we found a parking spot. She said, "It says there's an elevator to get up there." I said, "Really?" So we go up there, and it was actually escalators, and it was like had to have been eight different escalators, going all the way up, and it took you right into just out the outskirts of town. It was beautiful.
Yeah, when were you there? What month were you there? You were there in the
We
summer?
were there in was it March? Geez, I don't even remember now. I'm getting old. I don't remember. But it's 4 months ago about. Yeah. And
Oh, okay.
it was really warm in Sicily. Really warm.
Yeah, that's because I know. Well, when we went in June, and typically June's not that hot, but it was like really, really hot, and they were just starting to relax all the COVID rules, you know, and they had said we needed to have an updated test before going to the Vatican and all of that kind of
Yeah.
stuff,
Yeah.
and we had the test here to go over. And what happened was it was expiring, and we had this tour booked in the Vatican, right? So I said to my wife, I said, if we get tested again and test positive, we're not going to be able to do anything else.
Right.
So I said, you know, maybe we'll just let the reservations go, and on the way back we'll go, and it's the way if we have to test anyway to come home. But then they stopped that. And then I said, you know what? Let's just go. I said, if they ask for the thing, we'll show them. If they say we can't go in, we can't go in. Well, we get there. There's 10 million people there. Nobody's asking for anything.
Yeah.
Everybody's on top of each other.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, we didn't even go in. We did a day in, actually ended up doing 2 days in Rome, but we did it the first day in Rome. We wanted to go in years ago, back in 2000. I went with my two boys, two young boys. They were just one guy I was wearing on my back, and we went into that little
Yeah.
shop. We went to that little shop by the Vatican, and I was going to buy some stuff for the family. I bought a couple crosses and things like that. And then the following year, I went back with my brother Steve and his wife Sherry. And I'm in line, and I said to my wife, I said, that's the same nun that was here last time we were here last year. So I'll keep looking at her, and she's looking at me. When I get up to the counter, she goes, I remember you
Wow.
from the previous year. And I'm like, I said, I remember you. So yeah, and we bought some more stuff. But yeah, we didn't go in this time because it was so crowded. And we had been in before, but it just looked like it was going to take us an hour and a half, 2 hours to get in. And you know, when you're in Rome, you just want to walk around and do things. So,
Yeah, I mean, we did it because of the kids. If it wasn't because of the
oh
kids,
yeah.
I don't think we probably would have waited online.
Yeah.
And the first time, same thing. My son, when we went the first time, he was a baby. He was on my back, you know,
Yeah.
and we couldn't go into St. Peter's with him. We had to go in separate because we couldn't. I don't think I had the thing, but you couldn't bring the stroller in there. And
Oh, right.
I went inside, and I don't know how long I was in there for. When I come out, my wife says, "What were you doing in there?" I said, "Well, when you get in there, you've
Yeah.
never seen a church this big."
Right. Wait and see. I could have spent more time in there.
Yeah, oh, exactly. Yeah, I was like rushing around. I said, "You'll see how big it is."
Yeah. Yeah. It's
And
incredible. Incredible.
yeah, it is amazing. And we didn't go into the Sistine Chapel that first time. So, and that's what took so long because there were so many people there. It was crazy. And then we did, you know, we then like you said, we it's a great town to walk around in,
Yeah.
and
Yeah.
you know, every turn there's some part of
Yeah.
history.
Yeah, we've been there 4 times, so we know Rome pretty well, 'cause we get there, we'll spend a day there, and then we'll go someplace else. But yeah, we know Rome pretty well. It is beautiful. Beautiful to walk around. It's amazing when you forget how big the Colosseum is until you get there. You know,
Yeah.
'cause you see pictures of it and you say, "Yeah, it doesn't look very big," but you get there and it's like tall. It's just enormous.
And for anybody who goes, I didn't know this when we were there. You have to buy the tickets online. We thought we were going to go. The first time we went there 25 years ago, there was nobody there. You could practically just walk right in.
Oh yeah.
But
Yeah.
now you have to, you know, get a reservation and do all the
Yeah.
other stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And we've been in before, so we didn't go in. So a lot of stuff we just walk around now. But basically, we go to Italy, we go to the restaurants. We're looking for restaurants. That's what we do.
Well, that's the thing to do. I mean, the most amazing meal that we had was when we were in Calabria at the one of the hometowns where they had a, you know, like a picnic for us, and everything was, you know, the cheese was homemade, and the wine was homemade, and the olive oil was homemade, and bread was homemade,
Yeah.
and it's so matter of fact to them, like,
Yeah.
don't you have this over there? I'm like, no, we don't have this over
No.
there. It's a,
No.
you know, our salami is cured in 3 days. It's not
Yeah. Oh, it's
cured.
just incredible. We were sitting down, we were eating at a place. You know, we started in Sicily, and we ate so much fish. And I said to my wife, I just want a big piece of steak. And the waiter says, where are you going next? He said, we're going up towards the Amalfi Coast, and then we're doing Tuscany. He goes, wait till you get to Tuscany and buy your steak there. So we went up there, and they sell it by the gram or however it is. And he brings out, we wanted to get one. He brings out this steak. It's absolutely enormous, and it was thick. And I said, he said, it's going to be 75 euros. And we're like, fine. It was enormous. We both split it, which, it's more than $75, but I was dying to have a piece of steak. And it was so good. The best steak I had in a long time. But and we were eating, and you know how they do it there. They give you all these different courses. You start by the end of it, and my wife said to him, "How you have all these courses? I don't understand how you eat all this." And the waiter says, "We like to eat in Italy." But they also spend most, they'll spend a good part of the day there in the restaurant. They'll spend an hour or two in the restaurant sitting around talking and eating.
No, we noticed that too. Our steak experience was goes back to when I lived in England for 2 years, and it was right when Mad Cow was out, and you couldn't, not that you couldn't eat beef, but we were kind of like trying to stay away from it.
Right.
So we went to Brussels, and we ordered a Chateaubriand in this nice restaurant in Brussels. And the same thing, I mean, they came out with this big hunk of meat. We were just like so desperate for beef that we
Yeah.
had, I
Oh
think we
yeah,
ate
us
almost the
too.
whole thing,
Yeah, we were dying. We had so much fish. Not that I mean, we loved the fish. The best meal I had was down in Sicily. It was the linguine and clams at a restaurant. I wanted to get another plate. My wife said, "Just get one." I said, "No, I don't want to feel like a pig." I was already stuffed anyway, but it was so good.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fish eater, but when we were in Sheila, they hooked us up for a fish restaurant, and I was like, maybe I should change it. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm here. I'll do it. And it was so good. I mean, it's like they stick their hand in the water and, pull the fish out,
Oh yeah, it's all fresh, especially in Sicily. I mean, it's an island. It's just surrounded, and the Catania fish market in Catania is absolutely phenomenal to see, to walk through it, and all these vendors selling fish, and just it's just crazy. Everybody's trying to sell you some fish, and I took a video, but it's fun. We've been there a few times, and Catania is beautiful. What a beautiful town that is.
Yeah, we didn't get that. We went to because we only spent a couple of days in Sicily. We took the ferry from Sheila to Messina, and then when we had the car to go to Cefalù, and I have a good friend there, and he lives about 20 minutes from Cefalù, so he took us around the town and introduced us to the spritz and things like that.
Oh.
And then we spent a couple of nights in Palermo because my wife's family is her mom's family's from Shaka, so we went over there, and we went on a Sunday, so it was really quiet. But that was just so serene and peaceful and quiet,
Yeah.
really really nice. But Palermo was fun because they booked us a couple of nights to eat in the street,
Oh.
and that's for anybody who goes. That's a great experience to be
Yeah, they
in the
have that
street.
huge table set up. Is that what it is?
Yeah, they well, it's a street. I guess it must be, maybe 4 or 5 blocks long, like, New York style blocks long,
Right.
and all the restaurants just have all their tables in the street, so it's like one big, food party, if you
Yeah,
will.
that's nice.
And it
Yeah.
was, I guess they did it because it's probably and especially it was a Saturday night, so it's probably a typical thing that the because there weren't really any tourists there. It was pretty much all Italians
Yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And that's the best part about it when you get outside of all the touristy type places and everything,
Well, that's like Nicolosi, where my family's from. It seems like there's no tourism there because we walked around there for 2 days, and it seemed like we were the only people on the street. Shops were open a little later, which was weird. They had weirder hours than most of Italy. It's like they didn't open until 4 o'clock, some of them at all. And there's just nobody there. It's except they're all just in buses going to the mountain, to the volcano.
So it's like a, I guess, a stopover place or something, right? Before they.
Yeah, and there's no place. I mean, it's not even a town you'd stop in to go do shopping or anything like that. It's more of just it's only a population of 1,600, so it's a small town. Everybody knows each other. I tried to get information from the town hall there. They weren't cooperative at all. It was funny because I went in. I had already done my research, but I just wanted a death certificate on my great aunt who died either at birth or shortly after birth, Paula. And I had another die. I just wanted to see the another a document of my great great grandfather. And I went in with two pieces of paper, and I went in and I said, "Scusi." And the woman behind the counter put her hand up to say no. She never came to me, never approached me. She didn't know I was there or nothing. And I just looked at her and she says, no, again. And she turned around and looked at the guy in the back office, and he just looked at me and put his head back down. And I'm like, and I was like dumbfounded. And I just walked out of there confused, like, what happened here? So I just went out to talk to my wife. I said they wouldn't talk to me at all for, and I don't know what it was. They didn't explain if they were closing or what's going on. So, that was upsetting. But then I went across the street to the tourism department. It was a man by the name of Matteo Galvana, and he couldn't speak any English at all, but he was super friendly, super nice, and he tried to get us. He said, "Can we come back tomorrow? He'll take me over there personally." And we were the next day was Saturday. We were leaving. We were getting on a flight to go up to Naples, and I said, "I can't," because he told me that the place wasn't closed. They were still open, but he was getting ready to shut down as well. So. But he was very helpful and very nice. And I mean, Nicolosi's a pretty town. They have a beautiful church. They've got got Etna, and we went up there. We took Nino, my cousin, distant cousin, has a friend by the name of Stefano. His name is Domenico, and he helps run the outdoor adventure stuff on Mount Etna. And he said, go up there and see him. He's not related. He's not originally from Nicolosi. And so we went up there, we met him. He took us on a private quad tour of the mountain. And so we had a lot of fun. We
Oh,
really,
that's nice.
yeah, we
Yeah, that's
really enjoyed.
nice.
We saw most of the sites I wanted to see in Nicolosi. I saw the volcano. I wanted to walk on Mount Rossi. Those are two small mountains that were created by the eruption of 1669. And now it's like an adventure trail up there and biking path and but we didn't get to that, but you could see it from everywhere. And so we're going to go back. I want to go back in next year and go back to Nicolosi at least one more time.
Yeah, we're hoping to go in, maybe in September. If not then, definitely same thing, 2024 for sure,
Yeah.
before I get too old to go.
Yeah.
Well, Randall, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you taking the time. So for anybody who wants to buy the book, is it on sale? Yeah.
No, because it's not really that kind of book. I've had people ask about it as well. It's more of a stats book. It documents every single person by the name of DeStefano that went through the mother church and all the churches in that town. So it's basically names. It's all family trees. So there's no stories in it or things like that. It's just a connection of families, and it connects them together. If I could have gone back another generation or two, I could have tied them even closer together. But I could only go back to 1620 with the town records.
Well, that's pretty good. That's pretty
Yeah,
far.
pretty far.
That's not bad.
Pretty
And
far.
you mentioned now a Facebook group too, didn't you? I think.
Yeah, I have a Facebook group I started. It's the family of Giuseppe DiStefano and Grazia Pistorio on Facebook. Yeah, and it's got I think we have 80 members, and they're all from all nine lines of the family.
Great,
Yeah.
great. That's super. All right. Well, listen, thanks again. I appreciate it. Stay warm up there in Vermont.
All right, Bob. Thanks. Nice talking to you.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino, just letting you know that my new book, Farmers and Nobles, is now available for sale on www.italiangenealogy.blog/farmersandnobles, or you can find the link in the podcast notes. Thanks for listening.